Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Live from the Nasdaq market site in the heart of New York City's Times Square, this is Fast Money. Here's what's on tap tonight. Downward dogs. Shares of Nike and Lululemon plunging after their earnings reports last night. Is this just the start of more aches and pains for the stocks? And should you exercise caution in these names? We'll debate that. Plus, back from the brink, it wasn't long ago that we were ready to write off Alphabet in the AI war, but the search giant has seen shares climb steadily this month and just put in its best week since last July. What the comeback says about the future of big tech. And a potential SPAC windfall, how former President Trump's stake in his soon-to-be public social media network could net him billions of dollars, and what the options markets are saying about this deal. I'm Melissa Lee, coming to you live from Studio B at the Nasdaq on the desk tonight. Tim Seymour, Karen Feinerman, Courtney Garcia, and Steve Grasso. And we start off with two paragons of the discretionary trade falling from grace today. Lululemon plunging nearly 16%, its worst drop since the start of the pandemic, while Nike down almost 7%, hitting its lowest level since last September. The two names were the worst performers on the S&P 500 today, and both stocks now down double digits this year. So, do today's move signal cracks are starting to form in the consumer ivory tower? Tim, you brought this up. These are once the places you wanted to hide out, where they had defensible moats. Everybody loved these brands.
Right. Now, well, I think they're still ivory tower brands, and I still think that they're companies that are extraordinary in terms of the power of that brand and the innovation they've even shown within their respective parts of, call it discretionary, call it, you know, the wellness part of sportswear. But I think if you look at, first of all, Lulu, the question is really the question that I think we're asking about a lot of parts of the market, but most notably Lululemon. What multiple are you putting on a company that really kind of said, you know what, 24 from here on out might be kind of difficult, that the comps are difficult, that some of the innovation, but that, you know, you're growing in North America significantly less. Thank goodness for that international growth. And that's really where you have a discrepancy, not only in terms of the outlook, I think, with the investor community, the analyst community. You could look at, there's J.P. Morgan, I think, is somewhere around 5.25, Piper out there too. And then you've got someone like Cowen and Jefferies, I should say, is I think closer to 300, and it's all the multiple. They're at 22 times and these other folks are at 35 times. Lulu at 35 to 40 times for the kind of growth they were giving you over the last 3 years was worth it. The question is, what are you doing now? Nike, it's another case of, hey, we know that they actually have to invest in innovation. They kind of said that. There may be some pressure on margins. We're going to grow, 1% in the first half of 25 for Nike? Like, what's the multiple you're putting on that company? So it gets back to, these are fantastic companies. They're companies that, I guess, I believe some of the slowdown I was going to hear about 6 months ago, and that's really how I played these stocks. And for Nike, it worked as a short. And for Lulu, I talked about this last night, and I'll say it again. I actually covered that short yesterday during the day because it was, you know, around 15% in my face. And I said, going into these numbers, I'm pretty confident in what Lulu's doing longer term. I still think these companies are going to wash around these levels here. And I think, actually, I know we're going to talk to Carter on the charts about that. I think the charts don't look all that good.
Which one looks better to you, Karen? I mean, Nike's been sort of a slow-moving train wreck for a while.
Yes, and I actually thought, I bought some around 90 or so when they seemed to kind of get it together, when they sort of had the inventory, they seemed to have the inventory situation somewhat worked out. And so actually now I think I'm in the wrong one. If I had to pick one, Lulu has just been too expensive for me. Talking about that multiple, 37 or so was just too high, and it gives you no room for error. They deserved a high multiple, for sure. Now that it's coming down to 28, there is some fear. Is it Vuori or is it Aloe? Is it, I don't know that Athleta is, I don't know, maybe Athleta a little bit as well. But
isn't Aloe a plant? I mean, isn't that?
Both, aloe, but that's with an E.
Put aloe when you get a sunburn?
Aloe without the E is just a brand.
I see.
Just a brand, but a good one. And Vuori, I don't even know if I'm pronouncing it right. Those are really nice clothes, actually. Yeah. I think, though, that Nike's strategic position is a little more challenged. And also the challenges they talked about, you know, of innovation, they're sort of behind there. So it deserves to have come down. I think I would rather actually be, if I had to pick one, I'd probably wait another day or two to.
Which you did.
Oh, I did it myself. I'm selfishly rather.
But that's okay.
Oh, of course that's okay.
That's a lot, too.
I'm in the wrong one, but I think I would look at Lulu. I think, I mean, one thing that I remember, Leon Cooperman always said, you never see one bad quarter.
Right.
There's always more than one. So I think that may be more true for Nike. Mm-hmm. Here. They're telling us, actually.
Well, the product cycle seems to be in sort of this weird spot where it's sort of ramping up in terms of the new launches for women. We've got the Air Max DN launch next week on Air Max Day, apparently. I didn't know that was...
Come on, you know, you've been following
this. But just one more thing, the On and Hoka, those are real.
Take a look at the stock for On. It's up 32% this year.
And you would never think that those small brands could even take... any share from Nike whatsoever. So I don't think it's a discretionary thing. I think it's a full-fledged...
It's a Nike thing.
It's a Nike thing. It's a Lulu thing. I think the competitors are really gaining ground on them. I think they're too big, too inefficient, and now they have competition.
You wear an Aloe?
No, I had to think about it. I am wearing Vineyard Vines pants that I used to wear 100% Lulus. Now I'm wearing Vineyard Vines, and everyone has the same thing, and they're much better than the Lulus. These are smaller companies. It's a private company.
I asked the question. Boy, I didn't
open it up. It's a lawyer. You got to know the answer before you ask a question. But when you look at Hoka, everyone, they used to look like an orthopedic shoe. And now if you go around the street, they still do.
Now it's normalized.
Right. And now they have colors, though. So you see people using them.
Sold to you.
When you see people using them and wearing them now, everyone wears them. And they have, what's the other brand I should know? It's the Slides. No.
Oh.
The Slides. You know what I'm talking about. I have them.
You don't need to lean down and
slide. No. They're athletic slides. They're supposed to be recuperative shoes. Like they look like cloud based. No, I'll get it before. Go to Courtney.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
No.
Courtney. I think this is a combination of the two, right? I think you are seeing that consumers are moving away from some of these discretionary items because inflation has still been a pressure on the consumer, but they're still going and spending money on dinners and experiences and travel. That's not going away. So I think it's that pitted with the fact that these are real competitors. I mean, I used to only wear Lululemon and Nikes. I love Vuori. I love Aloe Yoga.
I should have asked you.
I'm pretty sure I actually changed out of that to come here, which is funny enough. But I think these things are colliding. So yes, I think they could have some pressure here. But honestly, I do think over the long run, these are going to continue to be a strong brand. So I think it's something you probably want to have a piece of. But it probably still will have some short-term pressure. So I think that's something to keep in mind.
Yeah. Oofas. That's the name of the show. OOFOS. And by the way, just another tailspin on this. When you really are out of it. I was surprised you don't know it.
I do know. Yeah.
Yeah. Your kids have to.
Are they making those for men?
They're recovery shoes. So a lot of the athletes, major league athletes, are using them. But just one little thing on this.
Is there a button to this?
No. I don't think there's a button to Oofas. There's a button to the Lulu story.
Okay.
So when we first started, right, the pandemic, people were overloading on appliances and on technology. Then we went to vacations and services. And then we went to spoil the revenge spending, buying the high-end stuff. Now we're coming back to appliances and electronics. Best Buy. You saw it today. So that's the button up on this. I think it's a cyclical thing. And it's also a competition thing. But I would be looking at Whirlpool or things like that are just starting to ramp back up.
The CEO of Lulu said on the conference call, consistent with what we've seen from others in the market, the consumer environment in the U.S. has been somewhat challenging. Would you agree with that?
I'd be interested to know the cadence of the quarter.
Right.
And how it went along.
Supposedly they had a slowdown trend in the beginning of the year.
Yes.
And I don't know about the rest of it.
And then I've heard of improvement post that. So to me, it's more about the trajectory than what the quarter overall was.
Steve is right to challenge the companies and not necessarily the macro. I think it's probably both, but Courtney said it was both. But if you look at Lulu, they only grew 9% in North America. And that's just
that's
not
80%
good.
Of their sales.
That's just not good enough. 54% is a nice number. And I think these wide bottom pants, Steve, apparently we're not selling so well.
They're catching on?
Well, I don't, you know, not for me. But they are definitely, I think, something that was brought up. And in Nike's case, you know, their Air Force One, they're reducing, they're taking some models out of commission. There's going to be some cost to this, even though that 4Q was about margins and things that were pretty impressive. And those numbers were absolutely fine. But again, Nike in the first half of 25 is going to be flat to maybe 1%. And we're now waiting for a second half inflection of 25. So we're talking about a year and a half away. And I just, you know, I think the stock's stuck here.
I always wonder, just as a matter of style, why do you drop a bomb during the conference call? Why not sort of come out with all of it at the same time?
Which bomb are you referring to?
The Nike bomb, mm-hmm. right? That didn't come out until later.
You mean their guidance?
Yes.
They always do that. Guidance is always on the conference call.
Yeah.
Same thing with Microsoft. There's just some companies, they just always do it on the conference call.
I know. I don't know why, though.
But in Nike's case, back to your Cooperman comments, which are often astute, Nike's been dead money. If you take out a gap that it had kind of in the end of 23, you know, largely this company's done nothing for 2 years. And I think that in this environment means it probably could get weaker.
All right, let's get to our other big story of the day. The seeming resurgence in shares of Google parent Alphabet, the stock jumping more than 2% today after some positive notes from analysts at Wedbush and Morgan Stanley. And shares are up more than 15% from its lows of the month. Back then, we were asking here on this desk, what is wrong with Alphabet? Did we mark the bottom? Was the concern premature? Karen, what do you think?
Well, I think that the concern is there that the rollout for AI was just bungled multiple times, right? And then I just think it got too cheap. I mean, people were like, you know what? The Mag 7 is now Mag 4. They're not in it anymore. And I don't know. It's a big position for me. I still think it's cheap. It is cheap, unless you really believe that moat they have around search is going to be sort of, you know, attacked so quickly. Mm-hmm. But the cash flow here is tremendous, and I think that they could be a lot more efficient. I'd like to see that. I'd love to see a year of efficiency there.
In the Wedbush note, in which they put it on their best ideas list, they make the point that over the past 6 months, Google's share of search is stable at 92%. So that concern, at least right now, that it is actually ceding share of the search market to others doesn't seem to be backed up by numbers.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I don't think that that's going to get eroded anytime in the near future. And I think what you're seeing is it's the optimism of what's going to happen if AI. I mean, that euphoria is not going away anytime in the near future. So you're seeing suddenly, as Apple might have be using Google as part of some of their AI searches in the near future, that's going to say, okay, maybe Google is going to be the next place for that. And suddenly people are going to put so much more of a multiple on that. And how much that is justified, I don't know, because how much of that is really going to impact their revenue in the short term? I think that's the question. But investors are clearly rushing to be there. And I think that's probably not over yet.
I think it was just a matter of when you say did we hit the bottom? They overworked the woke angle, and that was the really eyeballs on Google. That's why the stock was sold off, because they bumbled AI so many different times. Mm-hmm. This week, it was about the 2.2 billion install base on Apple phones that Google basically, it's a Trojan horse now coming in and stealing stuff from Apple. So I thought it was originally it was a win-win for both companies. But it's definitively in my brain a bigger win for Google to have that install base. And I think that's what rescued it.
Yeah, I thought the Gemini announcement was interesting with Apple. And I do think that it's all incremental to people reassessing. I just think in terms of AI and impact, Micron's a great example this week of a company no one was pricing with a big AI bid. And suddenly they say they're alive and well in terms of AI memory. And suddenly this is another AI play. I think, you know, there's so few ways, obviously, other than NVIDIA and some of their suppliers and some of the periphery directly there and a Facebook, in concept, of course, Google is a company that you think is right in the middle of AI. And we all know that they are. They've also been investing in this for a decade, not for 3 weeks. So it gets back to Karen and valuation and a company that for so many years we've questioned whether their core business was actually being eroded. And right now, I don't think anybody's close.
Well, the past few weeks has all been about finding the secret or the hidden AI plays, right? The areas of the market that have not caught up to what NVIDIA has done in the market. Is Alphabet one of these these names with people sort of looking
hiding in plain sight?
Hiding in plain sight,
yes,
exactly.
I mean,
well,
trying
Dell's
to
hiding in plain sight, too. And
which
so
one, Dell?
And Micron and
yes,
you know, a lot of these other
yes
names.
Yeah, I mean, I have Dell. I don't have Micron. I think that, I mean, if you think about it, this is a low 20 multiple. It doesn't even take into account the $80 billion of net cash, which is extraordinary. So you're getting down to a 20 multiple. Should this be a market multiple stock? No, it should be higher.
You know, when you look at Micron, when I've been in and out of this name, unfortunately, I did not capture this spike higher. And you need DRAM, right? AI is going to overload DRAM. It's amazing to me that the market was so caught off guard with a Micron name that it took this long for it to finally pop higher. But I think you have to concentrate, go back and look at NVIDIA's conference and look at the other names that they discussed and keep an eye on all of those names that were mentioned at the conference.
I just think the cost discipline, I think that year of efficiency for a lot of people, especially Google, is something you should be watching, and it's going to be a driver.
All right, let's get the technical take on both of these top stories tonight. Chartmaster Carter Worth of Worth Charting joins us now. So, Carter, let's start off with our retail stocks, Nike and Lulu, disasters today. But what do the charts tell you?
Well, that's right. So news-related drops and gaps on heavy volume, meaning resets lower in response to fundamentals, earnings that were good or bad, but either way, they have to be bad because you don't go down if they're good. Let's go right to the charts and try to figure it out together. So in the case of Nike, you could see that drop in gap today. We didn't really undercut the October low, which is the intermediate low for the market. But to put this in more context, if you look at a longer term chart, this is sort of the critical trend line. This picks up the COVID low, the low of, again, 2022, the low of 23. And my hunch is here, we kind of stabilize, which is to say, if one has been short, I would cover that, but it doesn't make it a long. So now it just, I think, goes dead and I would leave Nike alone, no trade.
All right, how about Lulu?
Well, sure, news-related drop and gap as well. We look at the short-term chart and there you see it. And it too, and this is the non-random nature of pattern interpretation. Why did it stop on that line to the penny where it was two other times? It's not a PE level. It stopped. It's not a price to sales or a dividend discount on our enterprise value to EBITDA. Stop there because a lot of people look at charts, including big computers. Let's look at the longer term chart. And where does it stop? It stopped to the penny at the line that's been in effect since 50. This stock has gone from 50 to 500, and now it just got re-rated lower to its major trend line. My hunch here, too, is that it's now where it belongs. The news is out. The market has spoken, and that this is a pair of twos as well. It just sort of goes sideways here.
Okay. And how about Alphabet? We were just saying that it's had a resurgence of late. What do you make of that turn?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, this is the opposite. One thing to note is that on a five-year basis, both the Qs and Google are up the exact same amount, 150%. Literally. And so it hasn't really been a laggard, but the symmetry of it all is quite beautiful. So if you look at this chart, those lines sort of draw themselves. You have a cup and handle, you can call it that, but either way, we're back at well-defined tops, and the presumption is it makes a new high, as of course so many other stocks have already done.
All right. Carter, thank you. Stay close. We'll see you again later on in the show. Pair of twos on both of them. So Karen, are you rethinking Nike? You said you wanted to be in Lulu, but Carter also said that's a pair of twos.
Well,
sounds like you got four of a kind, though.
That's a good point. Am I rethinking? I mean, I don't feel I feel like, you know, he's sort of saying this is sort of where it's going to settle in.
Yeah.
So that's sort of a pair of twos. I get why he gets that. It makes me lukewarm on it. What do I need to own it for? Lulu, I'm a little more optimistic, but also there, I don't feel a need to rush out.
Right.
Right, we have a little time. The cup and saucer to me looks like a smiley face.
Oh, so like maybe
which
a good sign.
Which says yes. It's happy.
Right.
Yes.
So funny.
I read that as a smile. You know, everyone sees what they want to see.
Right.
But we saw the same thing, actually.
Yeah.
Well, and he also calls it fundamentals.
Yeah.
I can imagine a bunch of chart guys like sitting in a bar, like laughing at all the people that
right, all the analysts.
Fundamentalists.
Right. That is ridiculous.
But he's right. And charts are indiscriminate on some level. And to the extent that Lulu's the most interesting of those charts, mm-hmm. because that chart is extraordinary from 50 to 500. But if we've just checked back to the bottom of that channel, while it might be dead money, I kind of heard my pair of twos was that it was a positive pair of twos. It was a positive glass because actually you're at the bottom of the channel of an uptrend.
All All right, coming up, could Apple be teaming up with the Chinese tech giant on AI? Brand new report says the tech titan is already in talks with one of China's biggest names. Who and why next? Plus, is Netflix rolling out the red carpet for a new all-time high? The streaming giant already up nearly 30% this year. Can it stand the spotlight long enough to set a new record? We'll dive in right after this.
This is Fast Money with Melissa Lee, right here on CNBC.
The spirit of performance defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Welcome back to Fast Money. The Wall Street Journal reporting that Apple is in talks with Chinese tech giant Baidu about a potential AI partnership to help navigate regulatory hurdles in the country. Apple and Baidu both making slight gains in that report. For more on this potential partnership, let's bring in our very own Steve Kovac.
On
Steve,
set.
Great to have you. Welcome to Fast Money Land.
Yeah.
So it has to go with a Chinese partner.
Yeah, it kind of has to. And this is just another name now we're adding to the increasingly growing list of companies that Apple may partner with. We heard about the Google Gemini deal early this week. On top of that, they've been talking to OpenAI. They've been talking to a startup called Cohere. That's also according to the journal. And now Baidu, though Baidu is different. They already have a search deal with Apple in China, similar to the deal they have in Google here in the United States and elsewhere. Obviously, there's just regulations in China that is blocking this from, you know, think of it this way. You will not have a Google product embedded into an iPhone in China. You wouldn't have a Facebook product embedded into an iPhone in China. That is why Apple would have to talk to Baidu for this. Look, I think what we're really seeing here is this feels more like a search thing than it does like some kind of fundamental iOS AI thing that's going on. That's because of these already existing agreements and the companies they're talking to and what they're capable of doing. I know some of the commentary early on when these reports started coming out said something to the effect of, oh my God, here's Apple giving away everything to Google or one of these other companies. Maybe it's just a search deal and it's just one part of the whole AI puzzle. That's at least what I'm reading now into this, but who knows? It could be bigger than that. And if it is bigger than that, that says a lot about where Apple is in this AI development, just right. How far behind and how much further it can fall behind as it spends so much time fighting the DOJ over the next 2 to 3 years.
Right. It does seem, Apple teaming up with Google versus Apple teaming up with Baidu are very different. Like, the perception is very different. China has not approved a single large language model developed by a foreign company.
It's Baidu. It's called ErnieBot. That's all they
right,
got.
Exactly. Yeah. And so Apple is forced to team up with somebody. But here in the United States, that's a completely different. I mean, the takeaway can be completely different.
And also imagine if they had to integrate Baidu into the U.S. and Western versions. We freak out about TikTok on our phones. Imagine if we had Baidu Chinese AI embedded into our iPhones. That would just be a nightmare just politically for Apple to do. So, yes, they have to do it. If this does end up happening, It'll just be geofenced to China. Everyone else would have the Gemini version of this.
But Steve, give us some sense of really where you know we'd be tracking the AI players in China. People are looking at the mega cap, you know, the K-Web and those Chinese names. And I realize it's not an apples to apples, and to the extent
not even close.
There is no Nvidia of China.
No,
but there is.
They wish
Baidu
they had
is
it.
The Google of China on some level, and Tencent certainly you can make an argument, or Alibaba is the Amazon of China. So to the extent that you think some of these plays, or Tencent, which is really social media, and we're arguing here that Facebook is certainly putting this to their benefit right now. Any thoughts on that in terms of these players?
I mean, it behooves these other guys more than it behooves Apple, because they are going to be, whether or not they're, which way the money is going. Right now, we know Google pays Apple for this. Which way is the money going here? It doesn't matter, because they're going to gain this massive exposure. So it's huge for Baidu if this actually does happen. I know Alibaba has been kind of toying around with some of this kind of stuff too. But if you're watching, it's like, okay, who's Apple going to pick in these markets? I guess it's just Baidu. I mean, who else would it be?
Does this make us feel better about Apple's role in China? Right, I mean, is this, you know, suddenly, you know, we've been talking about that issue on this desk for 6 months.
Tim Cook is there this week opening up that big store in Shanghai. You know, he told, obviously, there's a state media interview, but he said he's happy in China and happy to stay there. But
it would only
we know that's not
entirely true.
Feel
better about Apple in China if Huawei did not have Ernie Bot embedded.
Yeah.
But if Huawei has Ernie Bot embedded, too, then this is not a competitive advantage for Apple. This
no,
is catch up.
It's on the same. And that would also be what it looks like here, because Google's own phones, the Samsung, the latest Samsung phones, has Gemini built in. Google's homegrown Pixel phones has Gemini built in. So if, as Tim Cook has promised, we're going to break new ground in artificial intelligence this year, is using a rival's product breaking new ground? I don't know. What are they going to do with it? That is the real question.
June will be interesting.
June is going to be incredibly interesting. Yes.
Steve Kovac.
No pressure on Apple.
Thank you for coming by, Steve Kovac. What do you make of Apple at this point in terms of valuation, where we are?
I mean, Apple's definitely been lagging the other Mag 7. So I think of all of them, I don't think it's necessarily like a bad play here as it's, you know, been, I think, a lower valuation. But I think clearly they are trying to catch up on the AI trade. They're realizing how much they don't want to be left behind here. So you're seeing all these different deals that are coming up. China is their largest market outside of the U.S. And they really, I think at this point, are trying to hang on to these things. They want to play catch up. So I think take that with a grain of salt. But it's something you absolutely want in your portfolio over the long run.
This sounds like it's truly Apple. I've been in and out. I'm not in it now. And I'm always a little hopeful for the stock. But this feels as if they're losing on the China front. By the way, even with Huawei, though, in China, it's still the number one rated phone if you talk about Apple. So the problem is they're fighting for AI.
They're losing share.
They've lost like 600 basis points of market share in the last year.
They're losing share. But now with the DOJ headlines here, they're fighting on multiple fronts. And this is the first time in a long time that I truly feel pessimistic about Apple as a company. But we know they're not innovators. We've all said that. They're replicators. They're not innovators. This price on a chart, getting back to what Carter said, if you look around the 168 level, that's the level to watch. If it breaks that, it's much lower for Apple.
I mean, to me, it just comes down to valuation, where you have this enormous services valuation that is somewhat under attack, right? And then you have a hardware valuation, and it seems to blend together and be too high.
Right. Still. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot more Fast Money to come. Here's what's coming up next.
Roll out the red carpet. Netflix is ready for its close-up. The streaming giant climbing back to within a whisper of all-time highs. Can the marquee name set a new record, or will this run be a box office bust? We'll press play on that debate after the break. Plus, DWAC gets whacked. Digital World Acquisition Corporation shares tumbling after agreeing to merge with former President Trump's Truth Social. What the market is signaling about this move, and why the action in its options is exploding. You're watching Fast Money, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. We're back right after this.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
We Welcome back to Fast Money. A mixed day on Wall Street to end a record-setting week. The Dow pulling back 305 points. The S&P fading just into the red to close the day. But the Nasdaq finishing in the green, another record close there. Meantime, Tesla shares dropping yet again after Bloomberg reported the EV maker will cut production in China. Senator Elizabeth Warren also calling for the SEC to investigate the automaker and CEO Elon Musk over governance issues. And FedEx delivering big gains on follow-through from last night's earnings, the company beating estimates and announcing a $5 billion buyback plan, shares seeing their best day in over a year, up 7%. Courtney, you were pointing FedEx out today.
Yeah, and I think we've been talking so much about artificial intelligence, and that's the big story. But you want to come back to some of these companies that have good cash flow. They have buybacks. I mean, yes, it's a less exciting story, but I do think this is something you absolutely want to have in your portfolio, and you're seeing these things are clearly surprising to the positive because it's not in the news as much. It's not this sexy and exciting AI, but I absolutely think this is something you want to take a look at.
These not exciting companies, though, will probably be using AI and actually reaping productivity gains that we'll be reading about soon. But what a big week this was. I mean, there are two huge events this week. NVIDIA's conference, developers conference, as well as a Fed meeting, and everything seemed to just line up perfectly. These could have been two tape bombs this week.
I'm surprised at the reaction to the Fed, actually. Mm-hmm. I thought, maybe three, maybe less. I'm surprised. But I think the NVIDIA thing, it took a little while to get going, but now there's this race by analysts who can be the most bullish on NVIDIA. And I feel like they've kind of given reason to do it. This embedded ecosystem of NVIDIA seems a very powerful thing.
NVIDIA is impressive. We've debated all week who's more important, the Fed or NVIDIA. It's definitely the Fed. And I'm disappointed in the Fed. I'll tell you what, I think they goosed the market this week. I think they were way too dovish. I think the balance sheet runoff was way too light. He basically said, we don't even need to wait to 2%. We could start cutting. And yet we had the conversation. The high yield hottie even talked about like maybe no cuts this year.
We don't call that on air.
Michael Kontopoulos. Look, it's only a compliment.
I mean, everyone went over their skis, though, on no cuts, though, right? Everyone went over their skis, though, on no cuts. And the Fed was going to be super hawkish because they're data dependent. And that's what the data said. I have been in the camp where it's been dovish. I think that he will be dovish literally. I'm sorry. He'll be hawkish. He'll speak hawkish right up until the time.
Who's saying cuts, though? I mean, like,
who said no cuts
isn't out
We were talking about that last week. We sat on this desk and said, I'm going to be more dovish. What?
It's been three.
It's gone from 5 to 4 to 3.
It was from 7 to 3. Yeah, it was from 7 to 3 to people coming on air, not this desk, coming on air saying there might be a chance where they raise again. Right. So we went so far over to the other side. They're cutting. It's just a matter of it's not if, it's when, and everyone's eyeballing June.
And that's too bad because, again, think about what we had this week. We had existing home sales up 10%. We had jobless claims that are basically haven't budged. 210,000 actually got a little bit better. There's nothing in the economy right now that says 500 basis points has done anything. And yet financial conditions are as loose as they've ever been. Credit spreads are back to where they are in 2007. I think the Fed should have been a lot more hawkish.
Coming up, Netflix's blockbuster to start the year rolls on as a streamer stream rolls its way toward an all-time high. We'll get the popcorn ready. Hit the play on that name next. But first, we are digging into the options pit to get a read on the action in Donald Trump's social media network, how traders are betting on the future of this name right after this.
Missed a moment of Fast? Catch us anytime on the go. Follow the Fast Money podcast. We're back right after this.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Big swings today for Digital World Acquisition Corp. The SPAC shareholders approving a merger with the parent company of former President Trump's Truth Social platform. Trump Media could go public as early as next week. Trump's 58% stake estimated to be worth around $3 billion, while the company is only generating revenue of less than $4 million. The S-4 filing perspective, very interesting. You picked out a couple of gems.
Yes, there were. I mean, as a value person, I've never seen anything remotely like this. The primary one, I think we have a quote we pulled out of there, that the TMTG, which is the Trump Media Technology Group, they believe that adhering to traditional key performance indicators could potentially divert its focus from strategic evaluation with respect to the progress and growth of its business. They don't want to use them. In another part of it says, we don't want to use those metrics.
We may never.
Because they're focusing on those key KPIs, key performance indicators, might not align with the best interests of TMTG or its shareholders and could lead to short-term decision-making at the expense of long-term innovation and value creation. This is absurd. We also don't see their fourth quarter earnings. I would think it should have been in here, but maybe this is still, it's not stale yet. So the metrics, though, if you compare it to Twitter, it should be worth at best 1/500, which would get it to well below a dollar a share. That's sort of an amazing thing to me that it trades here. And then the big question is, what about the lockup? Mm-hmm. Could it, it is possible the board could say, you know what, we are going to allow Donald Trump to sell his stock.
A waiver
of the lockup, and he's free to go sell it. That may be. And if you can imagine what would happen if, you know, a big chunk of those shares came on the market. So that's another thing to sort of be concerned about. And then the last thing occurred to me that I find so interesting and somewhat ridiculous. Instead of, if one wants to support Trump and give money to a Trump pledge or whatever PAC or whatever it might be, if you go and buy the stock, let's say from him, you're actually buying from him, and it goes down, you actually, if you sell it, you will have a tax loss. You could actually turn what could have been a political contribution into a taxable, a tax loss that would shield.
So you're better off.
You are better off.
Buying the sinking shares. And taking that loss.
The whole thing, though, the no metrics is just, I've never seen anything like this.
It's like a win-win situation.
Or you lose more money, or you think that they're going to go, this stock could trade at any price. You cannot borrow it. I wouldn't short it, right? But it
sounds like the memeiest of meme stocks. I mean, it really does sound like something we've seen before and something that's going to have this much revenue for a market cap that's bigger than this room.
I don't know if Adam Aron is whispering in his ear how to do this. Yeah. I'm not really sure, but it's extraordinary.
Or Ryan Cohen.
Who
also saw the flip side when the memesters saw him sell, and they did not like that. But all of this today stoking some big action in the options pit. So we want to go to Mike Coe to see what he saw. Mike, what'd you see?
Nearly 300,000 contracts traded today. That's what I saw, which is close to 9 times the average for this thing. And not surprisingly, because the stock is impossible to borrow overnight, what we did see was puts outpacing calls, because, of course, that's another way to make a short bet, although you are paying up handsomely to do it. The most active contracts all expire in April. We saw the 10s, the 7.5s, the 5s, and even the 2.5s. Those were actually the ones that saw the biggest contracts trading. That included a purchase of about 13,000 of these. Buyers were paying about 10 cents. So this is just another way for people to make a short bet. Right now, the overnight cost to borrow this thing is about 200% annualized, but that rate does fall off over time. But that also means that the forward price of the stock is also much lower.
I'm assuming that these are retail investors trading the options, Mike. I mean, it could be the same batch of people who own the stock.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it could be two things. You're going to have retail participants. You're also going to have people who want to convert. That is to say that they want to find ways so that they can essentially get long the stock and potentially borrow it. So you're going to have some sec lending trades going on in here as well. That's a little bit inside baseball, I'll admit. But, you know, obviously there are people who are trying to borrow the stock for terms so that they can basically be available to sell downside to those who want to buy it.
All right. Mike, thanks. You know, Tim, you raised actually before you go, you raised an interesting question. Were there November contracts?
Yeah. I mean, there's different ways to look at contracts in a political cycle. Right. And obviously November puts might be valuable.
Exactly. All right, Mike, thanks. Coming up, streaming back to records, Netflix quietly inching back towards record levels. So can the binging bump continue? We'll debate that next. More Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Don't look now, but Netflix is quietly climbing back toward its all-time highs. The streaming giant gained more than 3.5% this week and posted its highest close since December 2021. The stock now just $70 away from its record of about $700. Courtney, what do you think of this run?
You know, I think there's been this big streaming war, and ultimately Netflix does have, they're the predominant player, and they're going to continue to be, right? They're just saying you want Netflix and chill. You don't want Disney Plus and chill or whatever it is. I mean, they're clearly like the big player in the space, and I do think that's going to continue. They're clearly, their ad spend is helping them, as well as the crackdown on password sharing. So, you know, I don't know specifically what this move is higher. I do think it probably still has a little room to run here. I wouldn't chase it by any means. We absolutely own it for the longer term. But I would not be surprised to see this go higher.
Yeah, this is something. Whenever you try to get away from Netflix and go to use another interface, it's just not smooth. It's clunky. Everything else is terrible. Netflix still, it is. Is it, like, when I go to Hulu, it doesn't feel smooth. They just have a lock on everything.
How are we defining smooth?
What?
How are we defining smooth?
I mean, it's easier.
I agree.
For the user, it's just so much simpler to use Netflix, mm-hmm. and you gain that loyalty to them. But at a certain point, there's so many tailwinds that we've already aggregated in the stock that you feel as if you should be buying puts in the name. You can't short it outright because it just defies all laws of probability. But when you look at the flip side, it's not about Disney and chill, but Disney has its own battle and it's been winning. So that stock price seems to be levitating as well.
All right, coming up, we will reveal our chart of the week, and the chart master will be back with his take on the banking sector. That is next. Welcome back to Fast Money. Let's get to our chart of the week, and that would be Goldman Sachs. The stock hitting levels not seen since November 2021 before slipping today, but still up more than 5% this week. It's best since December. Can Goldman keep going? Do you like? You're not
what's
Goldman.
What's DJ?
DJ Saul?
What's DJ Saul? I mean, he's laughing all the way to the next, you know, whatever that is. But no, I mean, look, Goldman has not only crushed Morgan Stanley, of which historically was their main comp, certainly from a banking and capital markets perspective. Obviously, Morgan Stanley has transitioned more into wealth management. I say good for Goldman on this. And again, if you look at Goldman doesn't need vindication of anything. But if you look at the strength of core businesses and how they continue to run a very profitable bank, that's why the stock trades where it is.
Yeah. I mean, if you think that deals are back, IPO market is open, then you want to be in something like a Goldman.
Yeah, and I think that's the big theme for this year is probably in 2024, you are going to see more deal flow. You are going to see a rebound in investment banking. And I think Goldman Sachs, I think they're well positioned to benefit from that probably more so than some of the other banks.
Well, let's bring back the chart master for a look at the bank technicals here. Carter, what do you see?
So a decent week and a decent period, specifically big banks, right? KRE is still struggling, and I would kind of stay away from that area of the market. But there is the KBW Bank Index, BKX. Let's look at it. I have five identical charts with different annotations. So here is the first, and there are no lines, no drawings. Let's go to the second iteration, and you can see how well-defined those lows are at the 70 level, whether you want to call it a double bottom most recently, but look at the trend line, right? Moving above that downtrend line. And then finally, you can draw the lines this way, whether you want to call it a cup and handle. It doesn't matter what you call it. It's what a reversal looks like. And final chart, where might it be heading? I think we're going to see 115 plus minus.
All right, Carter, thank you. Carter Braxton-Worth, yep. Cup and handle or double smile, as Karen likes to call it. Yeah,
smiley face.
Yeah.
For the banks.
Good news for you, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Good for the banks. Yeah.
Well, for the banks. Yeah. Yeah. I'm the money center banks, but also talking about, I do think this deal flow, which actually is good for Morgan Stanley, two business lines. They have asset management and banking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just think if you look at the money center banks, the environment that the Fed queued up this week and has been going on, and again, a world where I think we've stepped back from the concerns about their ability to give money back to investors, give money back to do buybacks. I think they're going to continue to also be very cash flow generative.
All right. Up next, final trades. Welcome back to Fast Money and News Alert on United Airlines. Phil LeBeau joins us now with the details. Phil.
Melissa, this should not come as a surprise. And a couple of days ago, when Mike Whitaker of the FAA gave an interview with NBC Nightly News, he indicated that they're going to be looking at all of the incidents that have come up over the last week, 2 weeks with United Airlines. Well, the airline now saying that it will see greater oversight from the FAA as it reviews processes and manuals. So not a huge surprise here, but certainly confirmation from what we heard from Mike Whitaker a couple of days on NBC Nightly News that they will be taking greater scrutiny of what's happening at United, especially when it comes to maintenance.
Phil, thank you. Phil LeBeau with the latest on UAL. Karen asked a good question. What does this mean for Boeing? Worse for Boeing or for United? Well, I don't know. It seemed.
I just wonder if Boeing's like, finally, somebody else is in the crossfire, you know? And so it does, the heat's off us a tiny bit.
Yeah. I think there's still a cauldron.
yes, there is.
Action kind of going on. But yes. For United, this is not, you never want the FAA to, you know.
No, I think for Boeing, this week was about, where Boeing CEO wasn't invited to a major powwow with, kind of key customers. I think it's an interesting time.
All right. Time for the final tray. Let's go around the horn. Tim.
Yeah. International Paper had an interesting week. Speaking of CEOs, they named a new CEO who I think will bring some change to a company that I'm long. And I think we've been expecting some change and unlocking some value.
Chairwoman.
Yes. You know, I love it when there's sort of a dovetail of fundamentals, as Carter likes to call them. And charts. And so mine is JP Morgan. I think it's also gravitational pull towards 200.
Courtney.
ITB, I think we actually have some housing data coming out next week, and pairing that with the fact that the Fed is indicating that they are going to be lowering rates again this year is going to continue to be beneficial for the housing sector. And so I think this is a good way to play that.
Steve Grasso.
Just coming full circle, we started off the show talking about the consumer and the changing taste of the consumer. Look at Whirlpool stock bottoming it out. I think they're going to start buying more appliances. Whirlpool.
All right. Thanks for watching Fast. Have a great weekend. Mad Money starts right now.
All opinions expressed by the Fast Money participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Fast Money participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Fast Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Fast Money Disclaimer.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.